What's up, guys? Max here, back with a brand new episode of the Scuttlebutt Show. And I hope wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you're having a great day out there. It is Wednesday, November 9th, one day before the Marine Corps birthday and 2 days before Veterans Day. I'm excited. I'm trying to figure out what to do for Veterans Day. I have this idea of waking up early in the morning, going out and trying to get as much of the freebies, the free stuff that I possibly can, and maybe making a little bit of a video about it, something like that. Let me know what you guys think about that. Let me give a big shout out to Harry Lime Pie. I tuned in today to start the show, dropped a $10 super chat. I'm blown away by that generosity. Let me tell you, Harry, Friday, I have a big announcement to make, a big announcement to make, and I already know where that $10 is going to go. Iron Lotus, what's up? And everybody else who hasn't checked in yet, what is up? It's great to see you. Thank you for joining me today, because today I have some insane stories. I think it's a little early to go recap the election results for some of our favorite veterans that we were following in the campaign, but I will say Majewski, the guy who claimed to be the war hero in Afghanistan, and he's, you know, brawling in the barracks and all that stuff, he got beat by what appears to be a very old woman in his congressional district. So he lost off of the controversy of his service record. We've got Don Bolduc. I think it was Special Forces or something like that. He ended up losing his, some of these high profile veterans that were running out there, but a lot of others won. And we'll try to do some kind of comprehensive review when all the results are said and done. I hope after the election that everybody out there is doing okay. Maybe you had to hug your family, tell them everything is going to be okay. But look, guys, I think everything's going to be okay. All right. In the long grand scheme of things, I think everything's going to be okay. All right. Things are going to come back around. If you're happy, you'll hope you stay happy. If you're unhappy, I hope you get some resolution soon. Just be a good member of your community. Be a good member of your family. Be a good representative of the veteran community, and we're all going to be okay, all right? Today, I have some crazy stories, like I said, and we're going to talk about some upcoming films. We're going to review a new trailer for what looks like it could be a real disaster of a war movie, and we're going to talk about a documentary on Netflix called Killer Sally, which I watched a couple days ago. Really wild stuff. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a little surprise. You know, the Marines, when they celebrate the Marine Corps birthday, they don't celebrate November 10th and then, you know, they call it a day. They celebrate for about 6 weeks straight. It doesn't even have to be November. They're having these Marine Corps balls all over the place, all around the world, nonstop, it seems like. Some of them go to 14, 15 balls in a season. I was at the Marine Corps ball with my wife a couple of years ago. Her commanding officer was there. I said, "You've been around a while, sir. You must have quite a few balls under your belt." And he said, "You know what, shipmate?" He didn't say shipmate. He should have. I wish he did say shipmate. He said, "You know what? I do have quite a few balls. I've been to big balls, small balls, and all the balls in between, and they are right there under my belt." So to all the Marines out there at the Marine Corps ball, I hope you're having a great time. I hope you're having a great time. That's what I hope. So lots of Scuttlebutt Show stories to get to. I don't want to delay too long. Tune in the chat. Let me know. Chime in. Tell me you're there. Tell me how you're doing. And let's start it off with a crazy and kind of scary aviation story coming out of the Columbus Air Base in Mississippi. Air Force training jet crashes in Mississippi after becoming inoperable shortly after takeoff. But the real interesting story is the fact that these aircraft should not even be operating. Let's talk about it. An instructor pilot from Columbus Air Force Base in Mississippi had to eject from his T-38 Charlie Talon training jet Monday afternoon after a mishap occurred, causing it to crash shortly after takeoff. If you guys are familiar aviation-wise, takeoffs and landings are the most dangerous times of flight. This happened around 1 p.m. at a private property about 30 minutes south of the base. Imagine you're out just, you know, tending your crops or whatever out there, and a military jet crashed into your backyard. It's happened a bunch of times. Could be a pretty scary moment. It says here, we had a T-38 Charlie flying with the 49th Fighter Training Squadron that was rendered inoperable and unrecoverable upon initial takeoff, Colonel Jeremy Burgeon, Columbus Air Base Vice Wing Commander, told reporters. Two of the Talons took off Monday, each with one person and instructor aboard. They were flying in a formation when one of the jets experienced a malfunction. The pilot was highly experienced and capable, according to Burgeon, and he praised the airman for his quick thinking. Shortly after the jet crashed, the base security and local sheriff's department rushed to the scene, recognized civilians in the area. Also, Burgeon did. for helping to get the pilot to the hospital. There were some bystanders in the field or nearby the field that helped get that member to the ambulance. We're exceptionally grateful for our community here. That's great. It must be a pretty scary moment. You see a plane burning in, crashes. You have to run up to the wreckage. Very high potential for fire or explosion, or you don't even know what you're getting yourself into. Little fiberglass shreds getting stuck in your skin. That's actually really bad for you. All kinds of hazards out there. Chemicals, a lot of the chemicals used on, let's say, some of the hydraulic components of these aircraft are very dangerous. So it bravo Zulu to the civilians out there who rushed to the aid of the person. Of course, they do talk about how there will be an investigation. All aviation mishaps involve an investigation, and hopefully those investigations yield some ways to prevent future mishaps. But here's the interesting thing. T-38s out of Columbus Air Base have had a bunch of incidences recently. Last year on February 19th, two pilots from the base died during a training mission outside of Montgomery, Alabama, which is tragic. In 2018, two pilots ejected from their T-38 and crashed in a remote part of Northeast Mississippi. In August the same year, the base halted flight ops for 24 hours while the ejection seat was inspected following an inadvertent firing while the plane was undergoing inspection. The Air Force has been using these aircraft since the 1960s, and they were already supposed to be cycled out. So they are waiting for their fulfillment of a $9.2 billion contract with Boeing to replace them with the T-7 Alphas. And the T-7 Alphas are coming in, hopefully, 2023. But we'll see. A lot of times these things get delayed seemingly endlessly. So people are still out there flying planes from the 60s, even the 50s out there. And I know in the Navy, for example. And hopefully we get some new, you know, some new models soon. Now, the question, and this goes back to an ancient seaman's question, an ancient sailor's question. If a ship is 200 years old, but every component on that ship has been replaced from the keel to the galley, to the island, to the forecastle, is it still the same ship? Because as maintenance goes on, as things get repaired, as they break and get, you know, made new again, if every component's been repaired, is that ship the same ship or is it a different ship? You let me know in the comment section down below. Glad that pilot's safe and everyone out there at Columbus Air Force Base, stay safe. Crazy. Is it the same ship? This is one of those old philosophical questions. Is it the same ship or is it a new ship? By name alone, is it the same ship? I wonder. Nuggets, thank you. Nice fit. I'm wearing my Moons Out, Goons Out shirt available at scuttlebuttshow.com, designed by me for you. So feel free to shop at scuttlebuttshow.com. I will be launching a Black Friday sale probably sometime next week, but you can get yours today and support the channel. And all profits and proceeds go to building a better and greater and stronger Scuttlebutt Show. Ever seen the video of that Russian jet crashing into an apartment building? I don't think I have. Can you send that to me? Fiberglass and crashed jets are not a good mix. Yes, remember that. Those are scuttlebutt wisdom to live by right there. For our battle buddies out there in Alaska, we've been talking about those folks experiencing some hardships. And what did the Army do? What did the Army do for the troops up in Alaska? Well, they said, you know what? We know how bad it is. We know the chaos going on up there and the sadness and just the general displeasure that the soldiers up in Alaska are dealing with. You know what we're going to do? Because we care and we're leaders. We'll change the name of their command. You guys remember that? I know you do. If you've been listening to the Scuttlebutt Show for a while, I know you remember that. Let's check in and see how that's going for Alaska. Four soldiers die in suspected suicides in 1 month in Alaska. Best they can do? Well, we'll change the name of your command. Four soldiers appear to have died by suicide in Alaska in the last month, a grim figure as the Army planners and lawmakers have raced to surge mental health resources to remote bases there. Absolutely sad day to hear that. In 1 month, four deaths by suicide. The sudden spike is under investigation after two additional Alaska soldiers were confirmed to have died by suicide earlier this year. So that's six across the 11th Airborne Division. Comes after what appears to be a steep drop last year when 17 soldiers did the same thing, which is just, you know, now we're talking about 30 people, 30 human beings, soldiers in 2 years. Many of you already know that we lost four Arctic Angels in the past 30 days to the enemy of despair. Major General Brian Eifler and Command Sergeant Major Vern Daly wrote Friday in a joint letter to the 11th Airborne. We can never replace their loss nor fill the void they left behind. After a significant reduction from last year, these recent losses are a heartbreaking reminder that this battle is not over. And that's as we approach the holiday season. That was not this month, but it was, I think, September is what we're talking about. It's a tough time. It's a tough time to be up there. For everyone who is still there dealing with the grief, it sounds like they're not exactly providing the correct resources. We're going to talk about that here in a second. So according to multiple soldiers with direct knowledge of the situation, the four recent deaths which are under investigation include three junior enlisted troops and a mid-level non-commissioned officer, which is could be an E5, an E6, something like that. It is unclear whether the spike of deaths is attributable to any particular stressor on troops in a region. Deaths by suicide often happen in clusters, it says. It's a term that they call suicide contagion, a series of events in which being exposed to suicide or suicidal behaviors through a family, peer group, or media reports can increase the risk of suicide. Have you guys ever heard of that? Some soldiers interviewed by military.com blame a confluence of issues, including abrasive leadership and the high-paced training schedule. When you have bad leadership and then you have intense, high demand, high pressure training, that is a recipe for serious amounts of pressure and depression and anger, frustration, and lack of general, team cohesiveness. One soldier, speaking anonymously, said, "They were my friend and things have been very bad for the unit." Says, "It was shocking and we went quickly back to training. There wasn't a lot of morning time." I wonder why people keep pushing to go back to the field or back to work after a death in a unit. I've been deployed. I'm sure many people out there have been deployed and lost Marines, sailors, airmen, guardians, soldiers, and the deployment has to continue. It's part of the deal. But in training, in garrison, there's no shortage of opportunity to provide counseling, grief counseling, stand downs, whatever they need to do to make sure that that everyone's good to go. There should be no stone left unturned for that. Now, it says something else interesting here that I kind of have multiple feelings about. Eifler and other leaders in the 11th Airborne Division have told Military.com that Alaska is not for everyone given the extreme conditions and that they are slowly trying to make the region a volunteer-dominant assignment. That pitch appears to be working. Alaska is the top choice among new recruits who elected to choose their first duty station. Little do they know. Little do they know, coming out of boot camp, that Alaska is rough. It says, according to that leader, or not according to, but in an order from that leader, they have policies like extra days off for units that remain DUI and drug-free for 90 days. And I have mixed feelings about that because when you give an incentive to the whole unit, hey, no DUI for 90 days, you get a day off. And I've been to units that had that exact thing. No DUI, no alcohol-related incidents in general for 90 days, 60 days, you get a day off. Well, when somebody messes that up, that's not good for the team. When somebody messes that up, you're like 2 days away and somebody goes out and gets a DUI and everybody gets punished for this one person's stupid DUI that had nothing to do with the unit. They live off base, they're out doing their own thing and they get a DUI and everyone loses that that thing that they were getting really excited about. That can be extra depressing. So I don't know if I think that that's necessarily a great idea. You guys tell me your thoughts on that in the comments. It says that they have sent behavioral health options with mandatory mental health checks for formations. Counselors seeing over 10,000 soldiers and sending another 1,000 of them to follow-on counseling. Sergeant Major of the Army Michael Grinston, who at this point I don't think any Army leadership has any sincere thoughts or feelings on the problems within the Army, says, "It's okay to seek help if you need help," Grinston says, "but I do want to caution you that it is not the panacea for all your problems. I think when we can use all the resources that we have, I think we're all going to be in a better mental state. We can't just use only one resource." And as always, the Veterans Crisis Line information is linked at the bottom of all my videos, and you can call 988 if you feel like you are in some sort of crisis. But for everyone out there in Alaska, we've talked about this a bunch of times. It's horrible to see that the Army come out with an official position that in lieu of all those soldier issues, what they're going to do, the best they can offer, name change. Let me know how you're doing out there in Alaska, and let me know what you think about that in the comment section down below. Wild stuff. Wild stuff out of Alaska. Hiram, dropping a $6 super chat. Thank you so much. You're awesome. You're a rock star. AN, what's up? Thank you, everyone, for the super chats. Those do mean a lot to me. Pro Hero, what's up? MC, everyone getting their memberships from Harry Lime Pie. That's insane. Thank you very much, everybody. I really appreciate that, especially Harry Lime Pie out there just dropping green. And by that, I mean memberships. That's absolutely amazing. And it always humbles me greatly. And I get excited. I tell my wife. And now when you guys drop a super chat or something like that, hey, you know where that goes? My daughter, my future daughter. Goes right there, getting her a brand new binky or whatever. What do kids get? Do they get binkies? I don't even know. Oh, I'm going to be a bad dad. I won't be as bad. I won't be as bad as these next guys who, I don't like this. Two men accused of planning to sell opioids to vets in substance abuse treatment have been arrested. So what these guys were doing was taking people, who veterans who come in for treatment at the VA, and then they say, hey, you know what? We can actually just sell you some pills. I know you're here to get off of them, but we have some we can sell you right now. Two Massachusetts men accused of planning to sell fentanyl to veterans seeking treatment for substance abuse at a Veterans Affairs facility northwest of Boston were arrested Wednesday, the DOJ said. Absolutely despicable. It's like you couldn't make this up as a joke. You go to your substance abuse counseling, you self-report, you get sent there, whatever it is, not rehab, but you're trying to kick an addiction, and you go there and they go, hey, you want these pills? In their most vulnerable, weakest position, these guys come in and they don't just sell them any pills. They sell them fentanyl. DB Vladimir Casado Ruiz, who goes by El Bebo, and Pedro Antonio Sanchez Bernabel conspired to distribute the off-deadly synthetic opioid over a three-month period starting in late July, according to their indictments. Ruiz was charged with actual distribution while Bernabel was charged with aiding and abetting. It's so bad because people get hooked on these things a lot of times, starting with prescription medication that they got from their doctors in the first place. And then you go back to that same facility or same organization saying, hey, I got hooked on these things here and now I want to get off them. And they go, okay, we got you there too. And they put you in what's meant to be some kind of controlled, safe environment where you're free from the temptations and the opportunities. And what do these staff do? They go in and say, well, we got them right here, bud. What these two men are accused of doing is absolutely appalling, Joseph Bonavolanta, a special agent in the FBI, said in the same release. We believe they targeted veterans who have valiantly defended our country's freedoms and are now seeking treatment for their substance abuse disorder and plied them with fentanyl, a deadly narcotic 50 to 100 times stronger than morphine. And I'm sure everyone at this point is familiar with the dangers and effects of fentanyl, which has become the number one killer of adults, I think 29 to 45 or 25 to 45 or something like that, which is totally shocking to me. Shocking. The indictments did not include any cases of specific harm done to veterans seeking treatment, and U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Massachusetts did not answer whether they were affected when asked by military.com. The case represents a disturbing nexus for the two populations ravaged by the deadly opioid epidemic. Of the nearly 1 million people who died by drug overdose between 1999 and 2020, 82% were caused by opioids. According to the VA, 20% of veterans with PTSD also suffer from substance abuse disorders, which could include opioids, alcohol, and other drugs. Military physicians wrote nearly 3.8 million prescriptions for pain medication in 2009, peak, you know, combat in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, which was quadruple the number of prescriptions written in 2001, which is pretty wild. The VA reported a significant decrease in opioid prescriptions over the last decade. The effects of opioid addiction can be varying and long-lasting. So these two guys, Ruiz and Bernabel, face a mandatory minimum sentence of 5 years and a maximum of 40 years for this conspiracy to distribute 40 grams or more fentanyl. The act of distributing the drug carries a sentence of up to 20 years and a $1 million fine and 3 years of probation. If it's true that they did what they're accused of doing and they're found guilty, I suggest giving them the maximum penalty. When asked about the Justice Department's allegation that the pair were targeting veterans at the Bedford Veterans Affairs Medical Center, the Bernabel's attorney, Joan Griffin, said she did not know. Isn't that just what they would say? I mean, if she said, yes, it's true, then her clients would be guilty based on that. So you can't go to the defense lawyer for that kind of information, military.com. Very sad, very, very sad, and very despicable. And I hope everyone out there going for treatment through the VA is safe from this kind of influence. That is horrible. So please, I am always critical of the VA when I find these stories. So if you have any stories like this involving the VA, send them my way and I'll put them on blast here on the Scuttlebutt Show. Wow, wow, wow. That is messed up. Nugget says that is even way more messed up. Crazy they just threw in fentanyl. Yeah. That is really bad. Really, really bad. Couple more crazy crime stories today. By the way, we're going to end it with something so good. I've got something so good for you guys at the end of today's episode. I cannot wait. It's going to be a super good time. Stay tuned. Stick around for the end. It's going to be well worth it. And as a reminder, and I always got to remind you guys, all these episodes are available for replay on podcast. And if you watch with Spotify, it includes the video. The full video of this episode is available on Spotify. So if you missed an episode or you want to go back and watch older ones starting in around August, you can go back and watch full Scuttlebutt shows with video on Spotify. So there's a new case to me that just popped up, and it is quite disturbing. It is something that could have been totally avoidable, and we talk about this kind of a lot in the show, but it breaks my heart to report this. Ex-contractor pleads guilty in forklift death of Air Force doctor at UAE base. A military doctor deploys from her family overseas to serve veterans and make sure that they're doing well out there, and is just hanging out when she's ran over by a forklift in a totally avoidable incident. A North Carolina man has pled guilty to involuntary manslaughter for accidentally driving a forklift over an Air Force doctor at a military base in the United Arab Emirates 2 years ago. And you can see her in a photo memorial to her on your screen right now. Ari Taylor, who's 32, was working as a contractor and delivering pallets of water at Al Dhafra Air Base when he struck and killed Captain Kellyanne Lealy on November 27, 2020, about 2 years ago. The former contractor could have faced up to 8 years in prison, but his plea agreement recommends a maximum prison sentence of 1 year, which is sad to me. You know, it was not an accident. It was negligence. Taylor was on his cell phone while driving the forklift in an area shared by vehicles and pedestrians. He didn't see Lealy before striking her, according to court documents. Witnesses heard the 30-year-old doctor screaming as the left front tire of the forklift ran over her body, but Taylor continued to drive. When Taylor finally realized what had happened, he ran to summon help from the nearby medical clinic, which is where she worked, but she died at the scene. An investigation into the incident found that Taylor would have seen Lealy walking from 50 feet away if he wasn't on his phone. He had 9 seconds to react. This makes me so mad. This makes me so, so mad. I can't overstate, by the way, the significance of getting a forklift license in the Navy and, well, in the military in general. When I was in the Navy, if you had a forklift license, you were like gold. You were untouchable. Oh, who's got a forklift license? Oh, go forklift stuff. It was such a valuable license to have. It was prestigious to have that forklift license. And it was a serious qualification to get. Anytime you're driving around support equipment, or we would call it ground support equipment, in a populated area, you're supposed to be paying the utmost attention, not exceeding like 5 miles an hour, and being extremely careful. How could you be driving with a pallet of water? By the way, these pallets of water overseas are not very stable. I've seen so many of them just tip over, dump all the water out. It's a pallet of water, and it's a pallet of packages, like 24 packs of water or 12 packs of water, whatever it is, wrapped probably in plastic, maybe in a cargo net. He was moving this from point A to point B. The pallets probably got chipped and damaged and all this stuff. These pallets can tip over anytime. And so there's an added layer of attention that goes into that, or consideration, because you already know you're doing an extremely dangerous task transporting anything by forklift, but to have 9 seconds to react and be so clueless and incompetent that you end up running somebody over so slowly that they're screaming in agony, and then you keep going, it's a disgrace. It says that she earned her commission from the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, Colorado in 2012 and her medical degree from Rutgers in 2016. She completed her family medicine residency at Travis, where she and her husband, Captain Jimmy Lely, were based. For this person, Ari Taylor, a year is not long enough, but you have to live with a lifetime of disgrace. You're a total disgrace, and you should be ashamed, and your family should disown you, and I just can't think of how much worse of an outcome I hope for you. I just hope the worst for you. Horrible. Horrible. I really, I feel strongly about that, obviously. You've just got this person who was not doing anything wrong, doing everything right, and you had to get on your phone for 50 feet and 9 seconds to slowly run over somebody with a forklift and crush them to death? You're not going to find any sympathy here. Hiram says, my opinion of that forklift incident involving a contractor may not be vulgar, but still condescending and probably inappropriate. Well, feel free to throw it out there in the comments if you want to. Former UH-60 pilot and Thai American who lost her leg in Iraq, Tammy Duckworth, just got reelected to the Senate. Yes, good for her. Need to hire only union certified drivers. Well, they get certified in the military, Harry. And it's typically a good, you know, well-trained person. It's a dangerous task. I hope maybe, you know, they can use that as an example and say, hey, look what happened. This, you think that just because you're going slow, nothing's going to happen? Here, look at this incident. And maybe it'll wake some other people up. I don't know. I just can't even. I literally can't even. So, in the era of COVID, in the era of the pandemic, I can't tell you how many veterans I spoke to. You know, maybe like five. Okay. So maybe it's like five. Maybe it's not like hundreds, but probably five veteran business owners who told me that they could not get their COVID relief loans for one reason or another. It seems like everyone who got COVID relief money was a scam artist. That whole thing, all that money was stolen. And the people who did it in the face of those who really needed it. How did the government botch that one so bad, I wonder? I don't wonder, it's the government. And then we get stories like this. Airman and Army reservist among four charged in COVID relief fraud scheme. It seems like every dollar of the COVID relief money went to scammers like this. An airman from Shaw Air Force Base and an Army reservist deployed overseas were among four recently charged in a scheme to steal millions of dollars of COVID-19 relief loans, according to a news release from the U.S. Attorney's Office for South Carolina. Senior Airman Kehendi Mubarak Ladepo, 26 years old, Army Reserve Lieutenant Maxwell Okobi, 24 years old, and two others were charged for allegedly stealing $1 million in government pandemic relief loans and attempting to swindle another million more. It just honestly seems like every dollar stolen or every dollar from the COVID relief went to scam artists, which makes these people the Scuttlebutt Show clowns of the day. The other defendants here are Jacob Lideker, who led the scam, and an ex-service member named Ganyu Ladepo, whose relationship to the airman is not public at this time. The other says the Coronavirus Aid Relief and Economic Security Act's Paycheck Protection Program, which ended in May last year, offered businesses small, forgivable loans to manage costs attributed to the pandemic. Beginning in 2020, this group of individuals created false PPP loan applications for nearly 100 people across the country. So they applied for 100 individual fake loans, each one around $20,000. The schemers would then help individuals submit false information to the lenders in exchange for the assistance. The group received a portion of the stolen funds. So there's, you know, 100 more co-conspirators involved in this thing. It is so unbelievable that this would happen, but it seems like it's the only thing that happened. According to U.S. Attorney Adair F. Burroughs, every dollar wrongly taken from this taxpayer-funded program was a dollar that could not go to a legitimate business in need, but it seems like the problem is legitimate businesses in need had an extra hard time actually getting the money. It almost seems like to get a dollar from the PPP loans, you had to lie. If you tried to be legit, you would get denied for some kind of reason, seems like. This is not the only time service members have tried to abuse COVID-19 loan applications. In January, another airman and his wife admitted to cheating the system for millions. And in July, an Army warrant officer admitted to similarly trying to defraud the government. A lot of veterans caught up in this. Ladepa, who entered active duty service in August 2019, works as a fitness and sports journeyman in the 20th Force Support Squadron. Okobi, who entered the service in October 2017, is assigned to the Army Reserve Sustainment Command, which was, according to a service record obtained by Military Times. He's deployed to Camp Arifjan in Kuwait currently, which is crazy. These arrests are representative of the Defense Criminal Investigative Service's steadfast commitment to hold accountable those who perpetrate fraud against the DOD. Of course, the problem being they'll never repay that money. How could they? They could have loans put on their paychecks and their taxes forever. They'll never repay it. So it's basically money down the drain. Each of the defendants faces a maximum penalty of 20 years in prison plus fines and restitution. All of the defendants have been arraigned and are out on bond, Schumacher told the news. But Lideker, who was arrested in Texas, is scheduled to be arraigned in South Carolina November 22nd. Despicable. Really shameful. Really shameful. And it'll never be repaid. None of that money will ever get, you know, given back to the people who should have gotten it. The government botched that one big time, big time. And I'm not really digging it. Not a fan. MC, thank you for $1.99 super chat. Vibe surrounded with little purple stars. Love that. MC getting that membership up. Everyone, thanks to Harry Lime Pie, bucking around memberships like it's nobody's business. A little alliteration there to start the day. We've got a couple movies to talk about. A couple, you know, interesting things coming up in the episode. There's a new movie. I don't know how to feel about it. I feel not so great about it, but we're going to react to the trailer and talk about it. So let's jump right into the story here and see what's what. Everyone's favorite Starship Trooper, Casper Van Dien, is now starring in a new World War II movie called Battle for Saipan, and we're about to watch the trailer. Battle for Saipan, an all-out war is shown in the trailer for this adrenaline-soaked World War II thriller from director Brandon Slagel. Saban Films, not necessarily, you know, A-plus filmmaking out of there, has launched the official trailer for the high-octane, fever-pitched new World War II thriller, Battle for Saipan. I'm going to tell you the truth. When a war movie is described as high-octane, fever-pitched, I don't think that sounds good. That's not how it should be if it's a realistic portrayal. The all-star cast includes Casper Van Dien, Louis Mandalore, and Jeff Fahey. While they battle insurmountable odds in the actioner that boasts fantastic fight sequences, check out the trailer below. We're going to check it out here in a second. Helmed by genre maestro Brandon Slagel, this one is sure to check all the boxes for those hardcore fans looking for a nonstop war action, including a mixture of combat action and sting hand-to-hand fight choreography. Battle for Saipan is an action movie for action lovers. Oh, God. Are you guys getting nervous? I sure am. Let's jump over and react to the trailer for Battle for Saipan, okay? Let's see.
Understaffed and we're knee deep and wounded, guys. Some of them can't even walk.
Everybody does their part.
As a surgeon, we don't arm ourselves during battle.
Whoever can fight, fights. Patching up kids is a lot different to witnessing combat. You don't know what's coming.
So
So we just sit here and die?
No. We keep fighting.
You're soldiers! Arm yourselves!
Okay. I mean, what do I think about that? Not as bad as I would have thought. Not as bad as I would have thought. Not, you know, getting me super hyped because it's a Saban film and it's described as this action, crazy action movie, but it's based on a true story. Is it an action movie or is it a true story? An action movie, a straight up action genre movie, cannot also be a true story. It's like those things do not coexist. It's got to be a true to life telling of war or an action movie. So if it is based on a true story of this, you know, medic that Casper Van Dien plays who has to defend his base and his troops against an onslaught then in Saipan, then sure. That's one movie. But an action movie twisting real events into a adrenaline junkie's dream film with, you know, blood and guts and explosions and machine guns that don't accurately portray what happened, that's another thing. What's it going to be? We'll see. Am I going to watch it when I get the chance? Of course. Of course I am. And I will let you guys know what I think with a review. So come check that out when it's out, when it's ready. You can get that here at the Scuttlebutt Show. So make sure you're subscribed with notifications on if you want to see that review. Let me know what you guys think about that in the comment section down below. I am curious what you think. Could go either way. Could go either way with that one. Battle for Saipan. Now there's another content movie thing, show, really, that I want to talk about today. And we're going to do a review. We're going to get my thoughts, my personal thoughts on another Netflix show. We're going to talk about it here. In Netflix's Killer Sally, ex-Marine who shot spouse tells her story. This is my review. Okay, this is my review. But maybe you don't know what this is. Maybe you've never seen this. So let me play the trailer for you. And after playing the trailer, you can see if you like this or if this is something you would want to watch, because this is going to be my review.
A jury will decide the fate of Sally McNeil, a female bodybuilder accused of killing her husband, another bodybuilder, on Valentine's Day last year.
You're going to be going to a shelter because of what I did to Daddy.
Sally McNeil has a tremendous physique, and she's married to Ray McNeil.
She's married to Ray McNeil, who's certainly one of the most muscular pros alive.
He looked like the Statue of David. He was beautiful. Lust at first sight.
Sally was the main breadwinner.
They were into some funny stuff.
There's a seedy side of bodybuilding. Nobody talks about it. A man would pay for what was known as muscle worship. It's basically muscle prostitution.
If I wrestle 10 of them, that's $3,000.
Made Ray happy that it was paying for his steroids. Then he hit me.
911, I just shot my husband because he just beat me up.
You shot your husband?
Yes.
Sally McNeil took a shotgun and blasted her husband and shot him again in the face.
I'm sorry if I disappointed you,
John. She protected her kids like a wild animal.
I remember how torturous it used to be to have to sit there and watch him abuse my sister and to know that I was next.
Sally didn't talk about what was happening with Ray.
And I've learned to suppress things and block them out.
To me, this was a premeditated murder. He was shot in the face while on the ground.
I have a right to defend myself.
I couldn't take it anymore. I didn't want to die.
So that is the trailer for Killer Sally, which I have seen, and we're going to talk about it right now. Killer Sally on Netflix, about Sally McNeil, United States Marine, who was married to Ray McNeil, United States Marine, who ended up shooting him and killing him, shot him in the face, killing him, and then going on trial and what happened after that. This is your typical Netflix crime saga where, you know, at first you think one thing's going on for the first episode. I think it's three episodes. Then they send you in a different direction. You're like, oh my God, I can't believe I ever thought that. And then they send you in a different direction. You're like, oh my God, I can't believe I ever thought that. This is obviously the truth. And you just keep going around and around, left ultimately to make your own conclusions and do your own follow-on research. From that regard, it is a really good show. It's done really well. Netflix production quality is always top-notch, okay? You're not going to go wrong there. It's definitely professionally produced, good to go, everything like that. The Marine Corps aspect is huge here. The Marine Corps, Camp Pendleton, Oceanside, California. The military really comes through as a major part of this story. When I watched it, I wasn't sure if it was just going to be like, yeah, she's a bodybuilder, this happened. And by the way, she was a Marine. No, this story really leans into the Marine Corps, her Marine experiences, the military in general, how they ended up in the military, how they met, all this stuff. It all revolves around the military. And even though I'll say some of it felt, even though it's a true story, some of the composition where they, where the filmmakers want you to think that they're going only to pull the rug and make you think something else, I found to be quite predictable. There are parts where by the end of the first episode, they want you to think that she is a victim and she was defending herself, and that maybe the fact that she is being prosecuted for this is wrong. She's wrongfully prosecuted. Then by the second episode, you're like, well, maybe there's more to the story. But that seemed to be the case all the way from the beginning. That's my intuitive take on it. She never seemed like maybe this completely innocent, you know, person in all this. But it does leave you, you know, scratching your chin, scratching your head, going, what do I really think about this? And there's a lot of other interesting stuff, like the muscle porn stuff that they were talking about, her wrestling on video to make money. It does expose some of the seedy side of the bodybuilding fitness industry and the way that money can corrupt, as well as the dangers of using and abusing steroids, which are plenty. And you should not be surprised to see those put on full display here in the Killer Sally story. If you're looking for a story about crime with twists and turns, this is pretty good. If you're interested in the bodybuilding world and some, you know, look behind the curtain of that, also really good. But there's something that happens in the third episode that really brings this around for me to be a positive recommendation. I say go watch it, binge it, get through it. You can do it in a sitting. It's something that happens in a final episode, which is kind of beautiful, where they bring it back to her family, and what the impact of these events that we're learning about have on her kids and the way that the military affects families, especially kids who grow up in military family households. Forget about the fact that, you know, the violence that was experienced by them, just the exposure to that violence and the military in general and the impact it has on children and the way that we can be really hard on our parents at a young age, only to then realize when we get older, it's not as easy as it looks. And when we got to that part, when we got to the end of this show and saw those final moments, I'll be honest, it was pretty touching. I teared up despite all of it, despite everything else. I really teared up at the end of this, seeing the final moments where we learn a little bit more about her family. It got me big time. It really did. So you guys go watch this. Let me know what you think about it. I would love to hear your thoughts about this if you've already seen it in the comment section down below. And if you want a full deep dive spoiler review about this show, then let me know in the comments and we can work something out with that. Thanks for checking out this story. Sally McNeil, Killer Marine. It's a lot. It is a lot to take in there, for sure. You guys, I would love to hear from you if you go see that show, that little like mini series on Netflix there. Let me know what you think. I am curious. Hiram, speaking of military Marine movies, it's a bummer. Marine Corps YouTuber Sam Glembin hasn't gotten a break in the film industry. She had a lot of good content. I don't even know who that is. I'll have to check that out. Nugget says, but it's a tragic story. I suppose in the end, from a lone glance, no one's in the right. Yeah. Roid rage, both sides. Harry says, that's true. Carlos, what is up? Nice to see you. Thanks for checking out this episode. How are you? Where are you? What's going on with Carlos? So, guys, there's another crazy story out of the Marine Corps today. I have two more little things for you guys. Actually, you know what? They're not little. I have two more things and they're not little. The first is amazing. Everyone's favorite celebrity chef, at least mine, Gordon Ramsay, makes a surprise appearance at the Marine Corps Ball, you guys. Gordon Ramsay at the Marine Corps Ball to give them a little motivational pep talk. Let's see what he had to say.
Birthday. 247 years, and I think back to 2010 when I was present in Afghanistan cooking for incredible Marines through that tough time. And I got back home and I was explaining to my son just the magnitude of family connect and how important you were for each other out there in that incredible, difficult war zone. And it was funny because even at the age of 7, he kept on asking me about the week I spent in Afghanistan. And he had no idea what was going on. And he certainly didn't give a damn about my scrambled eggs or a Wellington. He just wanted to always talk about the Marines. And so I couldn't think of a much better moment to come and say thank you to you for inspiring my son. And
so that's just a little clip from celebrity chef Gordon Ramsay talking to the Leathernecks of 5th Battalion, 11th Marines at their ball, which is so cool. He says, while working in his Hell's Kitchen restaurant at Caesar's Palace on Saturday night, the Kitchen Nightmares host heard the Marines of 511 were throwing their annual Marine Corps birthday celebration across the hall. Without hesitation, he dropped what he was doing to give the Marines a surprise visit. Hundreds of Marines and their dates were in attendance to celebrate. I wanted to take 2 minutes out to tell you all something very, very important. I have a son that is in the Royal Marines Commando, said Ramsay, who is still wearing his chef's uniform. That's so freaking cool. Ramsay then congratulated and thanked the Marines for 247 years of service and talked about how he went over there to cook for them. The Master Chef judge explained when he returned home, his son just wanted to talk about Afghanistan. And there's a picture of Gordon's son in the Royal Marines. How cool is that? His son, Ramsay's son, Jack Ramsay, has been with the Royal Marines since October 2020. Another Lance Corporal, Joseph LaManna from Sandy Hook, Connecticut, had a chance to speak with Ramsay following his heartfelt speech. I ran over to him, grabbed his hand, shook it, and I'm like, Mr. Ramsay, I just wanted to say my father makes the best Italian pasta in the world, better than your Italian pasta. Hell yeah, representing LaManna for his pops. LaManna told the Post, Ramsay got a good chuckle out of what he said before shaking his hand once more and leaving. But Gordon Ramsay, he made the critical mistake of going into the dog pack over there, those devil dogs, and look what happened to him when he got caught up outside the venue. Here's a little short from Gordon Ramsay at the Marine Corps Ball.
Let's go! Let's go! Hey, group picture!
That guy's like, hey, we got him. Get everybody over here, group picture. We're not letting Gordon Ramsay go no matter what. He's like, happy birthday, you know, Domit, it's raw. My experience here is raw. Send me back to the kitchen. That's my best British accent, by the way, Gordon Ramsay there. I just think it's so cool what he did. If anybody out there had this chance to meet him, I would love to hear what that experience was like. Shout out to Gordon Ramsay and shout out to all the Marines out there celebrating the Marine Corps Ball this month. Wow. So cool. So freaking cool. Absolutely awesome. And I bet they kept him around for some autographs and photos long after he had intended to go back to work. He probably burnt his risotto. He might have they probably held him up so long that he ended up burning his risotto. Damn it. It's burnt. And he throwed a whole pan in the trash, which is such a waste. I wonder if he's using Emerald Lagasse pans. What do you guys think? Anyway, that's enough. That's enough of me. I'm out of control. I'm a maniac. Now, I do have one more thing for you guys. One more thing. And this is truly special. This is like, I got the chef's kiss. The chef's kiss, speaking of Gordon Ramsay, of videos, and it's going to be a clown. We got a Scuttlebutt Show clown right here, folks, in this old school video of a sailor, a sailor. If you know anything about the Navy, you're going to love this video of a sailor just sending it at his own captain's mast. Well, I guess that's your moment. I guess that's your moment to shine. So here we go. Let's watch it. This legendary Scuttlebutt Show clown approach his own command and do this.
A Navy legend.
Oh my God. Before we go one step further, there's a couple uniform infractions I've got to point out here. First of all, that shirt that he's wearing, the top of his dress whites, is not a button-up. He had to cut that thing from bottom to top to expose his midriff there. And then his pants, straight up disrespecting that captain by waving his ding-dong around. And that's his downstairs neckerchief matching his upstairs neckerchief, which is, I would say, not properly square knotted. Now, to give him credit, he looks shaved with a good, well-fitted Dixie cut. Otherwise, this is dirtbag status right here. This is somebody who, if he was walking down the P-Way, I would yell, shipmate, and then have a serious discussion about his uniform.
And salute.
It's actually a really good salute, too. Base and movements on point. He said that's bullshit. Oh, man. I am not supporting this. I'm not a fan of this. I hate everything that's happening here with him, but I have to laugh at him just saying that's bullshit. I didn't do that.
Hold your tongue while the captain's talking. You're not entitled to a...
That, I assume, chief or master chief, whatever, some kind of chief, he's like fiddlesticks. He wants to say fiddlesticks so bad. That guy wants to say fiddlesticks so bad, it is making steam come out of his ears. But he would never use that kind of language in front of the captain. Meanwhile, Seymour Crew, Loudy, whatever his name is, Leiter, is like, that's bullshit. I didn't do that shit. That's bullshit. Those bullshit charges. Oh, let it rip, chief. Say fiddlesticks.
Very well, you're on a naval vessel.
That's bullshit,
that's not bullshit. That's part of
the
uniform code of military.
Seaman recruit libraries. I'll tell you what you're
doing. Aye, aye, sir.
And he said, aye, aye, sir. That guy wants to say fiddlesticks so bad it's making his head spin. Let me know what you guys think about that. Is that a Navy legend or is that a dirtbag who's now, you know, out probably stealing valor somewhere? You guys let me know in the comments down below about that Scuttlebutt Show clown of the day. Wow, that is just something else. That is something else. And says, standing at attention, though. Yeah, his face movements were on point. I'll tell you that. MC laughing with the heart hands. Nugget says that line, man, whatever happened just made him not care. Yeah, that's true. Something made him really, you know, you have to be a little bit not in a good place to do something like that. I'll tell you that. That's for sure. That's it, guys. That's going to wrap it up for today's episode of the Scuttlebutt Show. As of right now, I'm planning on having an episode tomorrow, but that might change because I'm going to be working on something kind of special in preparation for a, and I mean it when I say, major announcement on Friday. The biggest announcement I've ever made, you guys. Maybe having a kid is bigger. One of the biggest announcements I've ever made this Friday, Veterans Day, which is crazy because that's exactly the 5-year anniversary of the Scuttlebutt Show. And it's so fitting that it's going to happen that day. You guys, get ready. I need you. I need you here on Friday for a big announcement, or just check it out on social media after the fact. I appreciate you guys being here so much. I appreciate the super chats from Hiram MC and Harry Lime Pie and the memberships that Harry Lime Pie is dishing out. Absolutely blow me away. Thank you so much. As always, you can check out scuttlebuttshow.com to buy Scuttlebutt Show merch, which is all high quality, designed by me, all that stuff. Kitty, the show is at 1500 Pacific. I'm sorry that you just tuned in at the very end as we're saying goodbye. But Kitty, make sure you're here on Friday, 1500 Pacific, 1800 East Coast time, because I have a major, major announcement. It's going to be enormous. It's going to be enormous. I cannot wait to tell you guys about it. It's so cool. It is so freaking cool. I'm so inspired. And it's the reason I wasn't here with you in October. So come join me on Friday. Tomorrow's episode is tentatively scheduled, but could change. Check my Instagram. Instagram's where I post updates on the show, on or off, or whatever's going on with it. So please join me there. I look forward, folks, to talking to you. Oh, now in San Diego. Nice. Have fun in San Diego, home of the Scuttlebutt Show. Enjoy. I hope you're having a great time out there, whatever you're doing here in sunny Southern California. So, folks, with all that being said, I hope you have a great day. I hope you have a great evening. Wednesday, hump day, halfway through the week. Veterans Day is Friday. Hopefully it's a short week for everybody out there. Get some time off to spend with friends and family. I look forward to talking to you all very soon, folks. And for now, that's the Scuttlebutt.